Okay, we're back on tape. Is that, I mean, do you have the goal to have a family at some point, or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, I think, with the right person. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not a person who's that goal oriented. I mean, if it comes along and it's mm-hmm. right, I would do it. Mm-hmm. I don't have a goal one way or the other. Mm-hmm. I could see not having kids. Mm-hmm. I could see having kids. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. it just has to, have to see other circumstances develop. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the makeup of your lab a little bit. You mentioned that you have, I think you said 10 people.
I think right now it's 10.
10,
yes,
that's yeah. Right. Who are those 10 people in terms of?
Okay, in terms of job description, yeah. There are two technicians, four students, and at least four postdocs. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's kind of evenly split at the moment.
And I know yesterday when we were talking about the labs that you had worked in, and you said you had figured out a few things about how not to run a lab.
Right.
But how do you run your lab?
Yeah, something approaching chaos. as I said, it's pretty informal. I do try to stay. I have a pretty good idea what people are doing mm-hmm. on a day-by-day basis, mm-hmm. pretty much. Certainly on a week-to-week basis, but pretty almost on a day-by-day. I talk with people every day, and it's really at the level of just wandering around and saying what's up, and mm-hmm. And even if it's just more of the same, great, and I leave. but, usually we get into some hopefully interesting conversation, or I can suggest something to do, or I'll sit down and start working with them on the computer, whatever, and look at things. But it's really kept that informal. So we have joint group meetings with Dave McKay's lab, which are not, they're actually not for me to find out what's going on. They're really two things. I'd like to get feedback from other people. I'm happy to have other input into projects, of course, mm-hmm. and that can be very valuable. It has been in the past, and I'm sure it will continue, from not only from Dave, but also just from other, students and postdocs. And also, I think it's important to have such presentations because people have to learn how to give formal presentations. Right. So I think it's actually almost more important for that. And when we do that, so that's kind of how it, that's really to the extent that I formally run it, that's all that we do. Mm-hmm. I've tried, and that's partly because of my chaotic life, tried to have sort of subgroup meetings. We have three major areas of study in the lab, and with one of them we've tried to sort of have sub-meetings where mm-hmm. we talk about things and go over the literature more, but that hasn't actually been too successful. That's largely my fault. I hope we can get back to that, sort of more keep up with the literature. But that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the only, and then in terms of that kind of mentorship, in terms of how do people, on the formal side, how to give presentations. The other thing is that we started this, what we call the molecular biophysics group, which is, I started with a couple of other faculty, and we have once a month meetings with pizza and beer Wednesday evenings. And we have two students or postdocs from the participating labs give presentations. This is a group, and it's a tough audience. I mean, this is faculty, it's in an auditorium, and to give more formal presentations. And when they, and also our department retreats, those are two other forums where they can do that. And I will sit down with them afterwards, and I say, these were problems with your presentation. This wasn't mm-hmm. clear. This is how you should do it. And most of them take that criticism to heart and really mm-hmm. improve their presentations. So I try to do that. Like the writing, I try to mm-hmm. do that. The actual science is done much less tangibly. It's a mm-hmm. day-to-day conversation. Think up new experiments, new ideas and stuff, but it's really just on a one-to-one conversation. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't say the formal training is obvious to them in that regard, but it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I think that's best because I think I did come from labs where you had a lot of independence, and I do think that's important. I know plenty of colleagues who to the extent of virtually writing out day-to-day protocols for people, mm-hmm. do that, and I will not do that. I think there has to be independence. People have to founder around founder to some extent. Mm-hmm. But I also want to sort of guide them and, learn how to channel their thinking so that it's, you need to make mistakes, but you also want to not drift and be all over the place. Mm-hmm. So I think striking that balance where, first of all, people really have to feel the projects in their own hands, and they're not my projects, they're theirs. And I think it's legitimately true. That's not a sham. But of course, I want to be guiding them. And what I'd like people to have is a sense that it really is their own work, because it is. But I think there is training that happens in a very intangible way by just having these kind of daily conversations. What to do or not. And if I say something and they say, boy, that's a really stupid idea, that's great. I'd love to hear that and be challenged. And that happens, and that's mm-hmm. great. So if people, I think what happens from labs, and this happened in our lab when I was a grad student in my postdoc, I think actually Tom Stites at Yale, one of my colleagues, put it best. He said, I know if graduate student's ready to leave when they think that I'm an idiot, or some words to this effect, I'm an idiot, or I have nothing more to contribute to their project. Because, and you're never conscious in that kind of environment, you're never conscious of being trained, but you are, mm-hmm. And it's not only from the PI, it's from your peers as well, sure. But graduate student training is very odd. I mean, it really is, because it's ultimately independent work. Mm-hmm. And all we can do is kind of channel it, my definition of a successful scientist is someone who, can increase the probability of something working from, say, 1% to 10%. I don't know what those numbers would be, but, mostly you're failing mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis, mm-hmm. but it's sort of increasing the probability that you might succeed, at some experiment, mm-hmm. And how to sort of, mm-hmm. Channel it so that things will work. And that kind of stuff is very intangible, but people do pick it up. I mean, that's part mm-hmm. of being a graduate student mm-hmm. and a postdoc. Mm-hmm. And that's all I feel I can really do. mm-hmm. So, occasionally I'll step in and really do much more, like when I had this disastrous postdoc, and I'll write programs for people who aren't really adept at writing mm-hmm. programs. I'll do mm-hmm. stuff like that, help collect data and mm-hmm. things. I mean, some situations are tricky, like when we're at the synchrotron, and beam time's really precious, and it's a less experienced person, I'll just have to step in and say, look, this is the way we have to do it, because we really aren't so constrained with this mm-hmm. beam time. I try not to do that, mm-hmm. but, it happens. Mm-hmm.
Now, what about, you mentioned that you had this disastrous graduate student who wanted everyone who wanted everyone else to do the work. Yeah. How do you quality control? Because these people are working pretty independently, and yet whatever they do comes out with your name on it.
Yeah. I know what's going on. I mean, I look at all the data, and I do know what's going on. It hasn't really been an issue. This guy was a different situation simply because, I knew what he was doing because either I was doing the work for him or someone else was, and mm-hmm. I kind of knew that. But in the end, when we write a paper, I better understand everything that's in that paper. Mm-hmm. And I want to know that the data's there. And it's just that. I mean, I'm hands-on enough that, I do know. I would never, if I ever got to that point, I'd leave because, I'd feel very uncomfortable mm-hmm. doing that. So the quality control is just sort of staying on top of it, basically on a day-to-day or certainly a week-to-week mm-hmm. basis. Mm-hmm. It's nothing more complicated.
Okay.
Yeah.
So on any given day...
I'm not being interviewed, right?
That you're not being interviewed, right. That you're not spending 2 hours doing right. this. What does an average day look like in your life? I mean, from when you get up in the morning to when you go to bed.
Yeah, tons of coffee before I leave, so I don't get on the road and kill anyone. And then
do you live around here?
I live in Mountain View. It's not too far. Oh, okay. Away. Yeah. So I used to bike in. I lived in Menlo Park, and now I have to drive. But yeah, it's cool. I get in. Depends on the day. One of my collaborators is in England, so if I have to call him, I come in very early. But generally, I come in around 9, somewhere between 8 and 9:30, mm-hmm. depending. Come in, deal with phone messages and emails to the extent possible, mm-hmm. try to get all that nonsense out of the way. And then it's actually quite variable, and that's actually one of the fun things. It isn't mm-hmm. stale because if we're writing a paper, I'll start working on a paper. If I'm supposed to be helping someone in the lab work on the computer graphics mm-hmm. or doing something in the X-ray lab, I'll do that. That's really the hands-on stuff, and I just try to maximize my time doing that. Of course, if I have some of these administrative meetings, mm-hmm. whatever, I have to do them when they come up. There are tons of seminars around here, so I'll go, but they come and go, and I certainly don't go to all of them. It's pretty variable, actually, if mm-hmm. I'm teaching, of course. Mm-hmm. I don't really, in a funny way, have a typical day. It's kind mm-hmm. of, I don't plan things out too far in advance. I just come in and deal with what I have to do mm-hmm. to the extent that I can be really doing. Mm-hmm. Well, right now, all I've been doing for the last couple of months, in terms of in my office, is writing papers, because mm-hmm. we've just had a lot of stuff going mm-hmm. on. And that actually involves work in the sense that I've actually have to be looking at results and data, mm-hmm. interpreting, helping mm-hmm. to interpret them. So I would call that hands-on mm-hmm. in that sense, mm-hmm. even though it's writing papers. Then hopefully if these ever disappear, I can go back to actually doing. I have some of my own stuff one thing I did 5 years ago I haven't had a chance to write up. I'd actually like to go back and finish that off. things uh-huh. like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I do try to, I bounce around, basically, from day to day.
And how late are you usually here?
Usually till 8.
Till about 8.
Yeah, it's a pretty long day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm here, honestly, in the last 2 years, I've been here 7 days a week.
Really?
Yeah. Pretty much. I try to get to a period where I have at least one day off, and I did that for a while, but just things have really snowballed. Again, in a good way, there's just been a lot of successful stuff mm-hmm. happening. I try to take Sundays off when I can, mm-hmm. And Saturdays I don't work a full day, obviously, but, Sharon and I can go out and stuff, but mm-hmm. it's tricky. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that comes and goes. I'm really hoping to get a little less...
Yeah.
Next little while, really slow it down a bit. I don't work at home either. The one thing I've always been, I did it in graduate school, and I realized the two things I really avoid doing, which were a major quality of life improvement from graduate school, mm-hmm. I work very long hours, but I don't take work home generally. Mm-hmm. I don't have a modem at home. I have a little laptop. If I have to write grants or something at home, I'll do it, or I'll take a paper back to review at home in the morning mm-hmm. when it's quiet. Mm-hmm. But generally...
you can't log on.
I can't log on, yeah. And that's very intentional. I really want to keep it separate. It's one of the reasons I'm here so much. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of my colleagues aren't here as much, but they work at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all work this hard, mm-hmm. I think. But I don't have a family I have to sort of be taken care of course. And the other thing is that I really try not to come back after dinner. So I have the evenings free, even though it's late, I eat late. Mm-hmm. But that's something I found made an enormous difference, because I did that for graduate school, and I somehow realized somewhere late in graduate school or a postdoc that just, come in, get your work done, and then go home, and then you really feel like you have, even though it's not much of a life outside, you have much more. You can go out to a movie or, dinner or whatever, mm-hmm. or do things, cook, things you like to do. And I found that really helped. Mm-hmm. And that's why it doesn't feel as... That may be why it doesn't feel oppressive, even mm-hmm. though I work long hours, because mm-hmm. I do have it divided that way. And when I'm home, I'm not working. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do for fun?
I like city things, museums, mm-hmm. Going out to eat. Mm-hmm. I'm a big eater, despite my size.
Lucky you.
It's a good thing, actually. Until 2 years ago, and this is just, again, my total workaholic nature over the last 2 years. I have a shoulder injury, but I swam a lot. Mm-hmm. That was sort of a major exercise recreation thing. Mm-hmm. I haven't been doing that, actually, which is bad. Occasionally trying to get out to the coast to hike around and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I like, you know, outdoor stuff. Things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of city stuff, though. I just love cities, and San Francisco in particular. You know, I go up there a lot when we can. Sharon mm-hmm. lives up there, of course, so it makes it easier. Mm-hmm. And music a lot. I mean, at home, I like listening to music, and both at home and live, so I try to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the major mm-hmm. things.
What kind of music do you like?
Everything. Yeah. Rock, blues, classical, jazz. Uh-huh. Big jazz. Actually, mm-hmm. I'm really into jazz, so I do a lot of that, but all of it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you play any instruments?
I did. That's one thing that's been sacrificed after becoming a scientist. Oh. I played guitar for a long time,
uh-huh.
Which has been sitting, gathering dust in a closet for many a year at this point. Somewhere after graduate school, it just kind of got put aside and never picked up again, which mm-hmm. is unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that happens. Yeah.
Okay. Let me pause for just a second.
Sure.
Okay, we're back on tape. And actually, I think this would be a good place to stop for today, so we'll pick up tomorrow.
Okay.